This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
This is iFanboy Pick League 780, brought to you by Mack Weldon. For 20% off your first order, visit mackweldon.com/iFanboy, enter promo code iFanboy. And iFanboy listeners just like you who are washing their hands, wearing their masks, getting their vaccines, doing the right thing.
Well, hello there. It's been a long, long time. How am I doing?
Hello, welcome to Fanboy Pick of the Week, episode 780. I guess that it's a new second number. Time. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. This is Josh Flanagan.
Hello, Connor, I'd like to, before we get too far into this, I would like to do a special edition of the What Hurts segment.
Oh boy.
And this is a thing that hasn't happened in a while. So a couple of weeks ago I spent an entire day doing yard work and nothing happened. There was no moment. You know, I didn't like chop my thumb off with something. But about a day and a half later, I had a terrible pain in the tendon on my thumb. And on the opposite thumb of the one that I had surgery on in the past. Anyway, and so it has been hurting for about 3 or 4 weeks now.
Sure.
And I woke up this morning, and it didn't hurt.
Wow.
I've been wearing the brace very religiously, wore it to sleep, doing the whole thing, and it's not gone. But for about a moment after I woke up this morning, I was like, wait, which thumb was it? Because it felt so normal for just a bit. And
it's a podcast miracle.
I want to start this off with something positive.
So you're saying it started hurting again.
I mean, there's soreness. I just know how to avoid it. But for the last week or so, pretty much everything I did caused a sharp pain in my hand, my right hand. So it's sort of everything I do. But and I was like, all right, that's it. I have to go to the doctor today. I was like, you're making the call. But you know what?
Your body gave you a reprieve.
Thank God, because I could use it, is what I'm saying. tell them what iFanboy is and what we do. We'll move along.
We are iFanboy. Every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us picks their favorite book, call it the pick of the week. We talk about that book. We talk about other books from the week. We talk about the patron pick. We answer listener mail if we have time. We have fun. We have spoilers. There's your warning. There's spoilers. Josh, you had the pick.
Not a great week in terms of like knowing what the pick was going to be. In fact, I was just about done, and I thought, I got nothing. I don't know what to do. But it for a second, I was like, well, maybe it's going to be Carmen. We're going to talk about that. And I didn't want it to be Carmen again because I don't like to talk about the same thing. Also, feels like we just did that a week ago. But So I went with Time Before Time number one, a new series from Image, written by Declan Shalvey and Rory McConville, two fine Irish lads. Artist Joe Palmer, with colors by Chris O'Halloran, and upcoming letter Hassan Otsmani Elhau.
This is our second week in a row with an Image number one pick. Has not happened in a while.
Well, I love time travel stories. And what I really love is when a time travel story becomes about sort of the day-to-day mundane shit that has to do with time travel. When your job is like, gotta go to the 14th century.
Time travel bureaucracy.
Oh, that is my jam in a big way. This is very similar to Looper, I think, in concept. There seems to be a criminal syndicate who is using time travel to enrich themselves. We don't have a full picture of the whole thing.
Right.
Although I think the criminal syndicate is called the Syndicate.
They're not subtle about it in the future.
I don't think everyone's
worried about hurricanes.
So the main time sticky point here is 2140, I think. And the idea is, the first thing we see is our main character who you've been listening to this show for a long time. I'm not going to be able to tell you that information about what his name is. He's basically placing some people in witness protection. And I thought the cold open was really strong because they're in this sort of seedy hotel room in 1987, I think it is. And the kid's like, one more thing. Because what's the Wi-Fi password? And he's like, kid, Wi-Fi doesn't get invented for 10 more years. And the kid is totally pissed off about it, which I related to.
Was Wi-Fi invented in the 90s?
Well, it could have been invented in 97.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean that. I want to say that I had my first Wi-Fi router in 2000. So starting then, you could get them before that, but they were those Apple ones that were really expensive.
They were not widespreadly used.
No,
hardware.
I was an early adopter in that sense, I think.
Anyway, that kid's screwed.
Yeah, well, no, he thinks he is, but he's way better off.
He doesn't realize he's free now.
He doesn't know. He has no context for that. So, you know, there's a lot of things that are going on here that aren't directly explained, and you're just sort of going through the life. So, you know, he pops back into his current time and he throws up, and the guy's like, yeah, there's some problems with the time machine. And the other guy's like, you know, and basically this guy's trying to get out from under. He you know, he's got some sort of debt and he's almost worked his way through it. And he's like, no, I'm sorry. The pod you were using yesterday broke. And that's like a big problem because that means he has to keep working for some reason. I don't know. He goes to see his roommate. They have a bunch of beers and they're talking and they hatch a plan. Like, what if we just steal one and go hide somewhere in time? And it's hard to tell if they're being serious or they're just, you know, navel gazing about it.
I don't know that there's definitely criminal activity going on for sure. The syndicate's definitely doing criminal shit. And at one point they hide like a mass murderer, but in that drunken conversation, he does say that people are paying the syndicate their life savings to get out of Dodge because the future is terrible. They keep showing in the background news stories about hurricane, you know, super hurricanes and economic collapse. So it's like this technology is being used to go back to a time in which it wasn't as bad as it
is. But they also go forward. Like there's a whole thing where he goes to 3400. And anyway, it's funny because I was going back through this. I was trying to pull out an image of it. And I was going back through the book and I was like, wow, nothing really happens in this book. It's really mostly people talking.
It's almost like a movie where you can't afford the special effects where you keep coming in and out before the big effects would happen.
The structure is very much like a low budget indie movie. Mm-hmm. Again, Looper. But I didn't mind it. I was in it. The whole time, and you know, there's some twists and turns at the end, and
well, the big twist I think we should talk about, because I thought it was really effective with his friend.
Yeah,
was that, you know, they've hatched this plan, they're going to steal a time machine, and his friend Oscar goes down, goes on a mission, you know, not on a mission, goes on a job.
Well, they're about to go do the thing, and someone's like, hey, Oscar, we need you for a thing. And he's like, all right, I'll go do this thing. Like, I'll be right back. I'm just going to, you know, keep up appearances.
And I think, does it break the time machine?
Yeah, I think he can't get back.
Well, so it breaks, and he finally does get back, and he had been in the 3400s, and he comes back, and he's an old, old man. So now his friend, who was young and vital like the main character, about to go on this mission, comes back, and he's, you know, in a future wheelchair. He's got oxygen hooked up. Like, he's done. Mm-hmm. So now this partner in crime and his friend are, you know.
Also,
he gets to live his whole life in the future, which apparently wasn't that great.
He's also not done, like kind of an old man. Like, he's been through it. Like, he's got bald head with, like, four patches of hair. That's not a good thing. That's not how you want it to go. Yeah. It's funny because wheelchair technology has not improved. It's just a big old tank on the back of it.
Yeah.
I just also, like, through that whole thing, the dialogue was really strong. Like, I don't know who Rory McConville is, but I know that Declan Shalvey, you know, primarily came from being an artist, you know, a penciler. And this script was really strong, I thought.
Yeah, I liked it a lot.
I mean, like, the dialogue, the pacing, the dissemination of information was all very specific and effective. And it was just enough that you didn't feel lost, but you didn't have to have everything explained to you. Like, everything was shown and not told. There was not a first-person dialogue through here to sort of explain what was going on. I mean, really strong storytelling through this whole thing. And again, as I look back through it, it's mostly people walking and talking or sitting and talking, and it, which you would think that's not taking advantage of the comic book medium, but it really worked. This artist, Joe Palmer, reminds me of, I guess, the Ba and Moon brothers.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah,
I think that was sort of the vibe that I was getting. He did this thing where he used sort of wide shots with kind of extreme angles. So there's like a lot of the, you know, exterior shots are low or above. Then there's a bunch of sort of wide angle, you know, sort of curved perspective shots. And again, very cinematic, in a way that, like, now I don't mean that in a way that, like, I looked at this and said, oh, this is just a movie pitch, but there is a storyboard quality to it. And you could see this very easily as a film. But I don't think it took away from the comic book craft of it.
I don't think so at all. I didn't get that vibe. But it's we just assume every indie book is a pitch.
Yeah,
book, but
and they should, because you won't make enough money otherwise.
But Declan Shalvey is, you know, he's an honest lifer, because it sounds bad, but, you know, he's a veteran in the comic industry. Yeah. He knows how to make comics, and
he really does.
I think I forgot partway through this wasn't Shalvey. Not that it's his style, but I just sort of forgot he didn't draw it too. That's just a compliment to the art, because the art's terrific and Shalvey's a terrific artist.
The cover, it's funny because the cover was him, and I go, I think that's him. And it did make me go, wow, he hasn't drawn anything for a while. And I get there's all sorts of reasons for why people did that. But man, I was thinking of that, whatever that book was that he did with Warren Ellis, and I don't think it finished. But he did some sequences in there that were just masterful. And I remember that. There's a fight scene in the kitchen or something like that.
If you don't have to draw, you don't draw.
Yeah, I think we've learned that, because the drawing for a lot of people kills them.
Yeah.
Literally and figuratively. So, but he can draw, and I do miss that a lot.
It was very good. I'm not surprised. I suspected even that this would be the pick, because you're such a Shelby fan.
I won't say that, like, I finished the book and I was like, that's the thing, because, spoiler, it's also the patron pick. And sometimes I put the patron pick into a different bubble when I'm reading it. But when I went back afterwards, I went, oh, that's the best book I read. Like, this ticks a ton of boxes. And I think what's also interesting is that, you know, we don't plan what we're going to say here about the book, really. We just sort of, but once I started going and thinking about it, and like, all it's great when all the good things about a book come out, when you start sort of thinking about it and analyzing it. That's one of the best things, because it was pretty subtle in its execution.
Yeah, it was very good. It was one of the better Image number ones in a while.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it was just a pick last week and it was good, but, like, there's been a drought. We've had three this year, which is fairly good for recent years. Yeah. In recent years, Image has not been operating at the highest level.
Well, it's also not it's not a high concept pitch, other than it is a sci-fi thing with time travel, but it is very grounded and street level. It's not, you know, zombies and time travel. It's not there's
which
not,
I really enjoyed. I thought the characters were good and their problems were interesting. I thought it was very fun.
Yep.
So I laughed this week when I saw Giant Size, Amazing Spider-Man, King's Ransom, number one, which if you've been reading The Amazing Spider-Man and following the story of Boomerang and Kingpin and Spider-Man for the last however long, this was the finale. So if you didn't read this one, you would have missed how the story wrapped up.
I have learned with this series too that I need to check each all of these. I've learned that much. And when I see Nick Spencer's writing it, and you can see on the cover, you've got, you know, the Kingpin. The cover appears, by the way, that he's going to have some sort of mystical powers, which is not really what it's about.
The tablets do.
Kind of. But either way, you know, you see Spider-Man and Boomerang, and you're like, oh, I guess that's the thing.
I thought about it. I went right past it, and I thought, wait a minute.
Yep.
I went back and looked at the cover. And same thing you did, and I was like, oh, shit. And then the thing is, like, I thought this was a really good issue.
Yes, it was.
But I was annoyed. There has to be a reason they keep doing this with Spider-Man. I don't know if it's lining up to get to 1,000. It's a long way off. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. They've done this several times throughout the course of Spencer's run where the important things happen in these one shots for no apparent reason. And I don't know why. But whatever. This is the final issue.
My armchair quarterbackness would be that maybe there's attrition in the week, the two week sort of issues, and they want to keep the onus on, like, this is when the big things happens, and so they make sure that those are in issues that stand out, which to you and I maybe seem like things that we would more likely to ignore, but maybe to other readers it's something they're going to be more likely to notice, like it's almost like jumping on and off points, which are often the same thing, you know, are being highlighted in those ways. And also, you know, there's something attractive to an old-timey comic book reader about Giant Size, Amazing Spider-Man, King's Ransom, number one. Like, it's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And it was a bigger than it was a giant size, so that means it's 40, maybe 40.
Double issue.
Yeah, double issue. But aside from all that, that's just packaging. We have the wrap-up to this Boomerang and Spider-Man story, or at least as it exists now, and it is tragic. I was so upset.
It was tragic, but awesome. Like,
yes,
I was sad that I went, that is awesome, because I didn't see it coming.
Yep.
And it made total sense. It's one of those things where you go, no, well, okay, like, because it totally tracks with the characters.
It's kill your babies.
Before that, the unexpected bit for me that I really enjoyed also was the sort of impromptu New Avengers reunion. Mm-hmm. Of Luke Cage, Wolverine, Hawkeye, Jessica Jones, Spider-Woman, and Spider-Man, and Iron Fist even, although he didn't really come until later. But it was nice. They were like, hey, it's the new Avengers. We're hanging out. And then Luke gets to do Avengers Assemble, and I was like, that made me feel good, because that was sort of the last great era of comics. And there was even a funny bit there where they're all mad at Spider-Man because he doesn't attend the reunion dinners, because he doesn't check his email.
I love it. I mean, it's not hard to go, well, Jesus, how do you think of something like that? And I was like, oh, that's how people feel. Like, that's a real thing. Like, people are like, hey, what are you doing? And you're so wrapped up in your own shit.
Yep.
And your problems, and they seem gigantic. And everyone's like, we all have problems too. You know, we're supposed to be friends. You're not a good friend. And I was like, oh, that's the ouch. Right. That's really painful. So there's that, and there's the shedding of the new suit. And I think it hung around just long enough.
Yeah,
to be an interesting concept, but then, like, this isn't right. Because you're thinking that the whole time you're reading it, you're like, that's kind of fun, but that ain't right. And, you know,
I was thinking that during the conversation with the new Avengers. I was like, this is being recorded for the public.
Yeah.
The whole new suit, if you haven't been reading, is that it's provided to him by J. Jonah Jameson's new company.
Threats and Menaces.
Live streams all of his adventures. And so everything is being live streamed all the time, Spider-Man's doing, which seems dangerous for a guy who won't shut his mouth. And there was even a bit. During J. Jonah Jameson's presentation, when he was unveiling his new product, it reminded me of somebody. Oh, Stan Lee. Uh-huh. Like, it was very Stan Lee-esque, and like very carnival barkery.
I want to know what kind of funding this website that does content has. That they can create an experience where people can do a VR Spider Slayer thing, but like there's real robots running around and the technology of the suit. And I was like, this doesn't jive with content revenue.
Absolutely true. However, I thought it was really smart.
Yes.
So the big thing he reveals is that they have these spider robots, the pro spider slayers, where you can log in with your phone and you can control them remotely like a video game. So people are doing that. And then eventually they go from fighting bad guys to fighting, to smashing property and fighting each other, which is exactly what would happen. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was really good as a social commentary.
So when he gets rid of the suit, he taps the side of his head and it just disappears. And I'm like, well, isn't he still wearing the suit? He just made it look different.
I don't know. Who knows?
Or was the suit ephemeral? Doesn't matter. It's about
the suit was here all along.
Whoa.
I just think that, like, you know, then we got a little bit of Black Cat helping out.
That was nice.
And then, the whole thing is they're trying to find these tablets, these mystical tablets. And I'll confess, I had lost that whole train of the storyline.
Oh, I wasn't even paying attention to it.
So when that became the big plot point, I was like, oh, okay, I don't really remember this. But basically, Boomerang's looking for these tablets, and so is Kingpin. And that's been the conflict.
And then, the big sort of deep dive into Kingpin history, which took place in Daredevil, is that, you know, he lost his wife and son. And all he's wanted this whole time is to get his wife back. That's his humanity. That's his weakness.
And that's the tablets. Tablets will bring her back.
Right. And then he realizes that she's going to hate him because she had to shoot their son, the rose, and so he brings back the son instead of the wife from death, and that's going to be the next thing that happens, which is some deep 70s comic book shit.
Yeah, and in the middle of it, the Boomerang Revenge Squad, which is Boomerang's ex-teammates, show up, Shocker, and who are these other guys?
I'm getting it mixed up with the other Spider-Man book I read this week without looking. The Speedy one.
Yeah, I only know Shocker. I don't know who these other two guys are.
Yeah,
but they fight, you know, they're mad at him for being good. And then the big reveal happens at the end after Spider-Man saves the day is that Boomerang was never really good. The whole thing was that he had been reformed. He was Peter's roommate. He was being a hero. They had adventures together. Peter had to keep standing up for him in the hero community. And then when he gets home, when Black Cat helps get him home because he gets knocked out, he finds a letter from Boomerang saying basically doing the classic end of the movie reveal, the Kaiser Soze, sum up that he has been bad this whole time.
Did and he know, like, that Peter Parker was Spider-Man?
No.
Because the note said to Spidey for Pete. And then at the beginning, he says something about...
No, the note says Dear Spidey.
Okay. Right, that's the beginning, but the outside of the envelope on another page says, and he says, you know, it's not cool to read someone else's mail. It's a federal offense. And then if you look, there's two. Okay, so go.
I think Pete's supposed to get a letter to Spidey because he doesn't.
Okay,
well,
look,
I mean,
though.
Yeah, I'm looking
on page 35, to Spidey for Pete, and then on the next page, 36, you got Boomerang standing over Spider-Man's body and his mask's off. Interesting. I just don't know, and I'm okay with not knowing. I think that totally works. By the way, then all the new adventures coming into the apartment was great. They're all there in the hallway. It's very silly. And then the apartment expands to friends like levels. And
it was good. It was really good. I mean, we had our problems with this book during the Kindred storyline, which went on way, way, way too long.
And it's still seeming to
but this was a really terrific issue.
Yeah, it was fun.
It really was. I really liked it. I don't know if this has been my pick, but there was a lot of books this week I enjoyed that could have been the pick. But
I don't know that it was like a great. I don't know that it was like a great issue. I don't think the art did its job or whatever. It's fine. It was more just like very high on the good old superhero scale in terms of a Spider-Man story. You know, just like, you know, like a good burger.
It was one of the better Spider-Man issues in a while.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Over at Image again, Geiger number 2 from Jeff Johns and Gary Frank, which came out quite timely, I might add. I think it's around 4 or 5 when we're going to start to see whatever it is that's happened, but I was interested. This is a weird book. If you were like, this is Jeff Johns' new book, I was like, Jeff Johns didn't write this.
Yeah.
It's so strange. I don't know what to make of it. I don't know that I'm going to sit here and tell you that, like, this is great or this is terrible. I do know that I will read the next issue because I don't know what the hell this is. I did like
enjoyable though. Like
it
it's
is,
strange,
it is.
But I like it. It's, you know, it's the story of this guy who, like, it's one of Image's many post-apocalyptic dystopian books.
Yes.
We've discussed that, but it's a bit of a superhero twist where this guy was caught outside during the blast, and now he's this radioactive hero, sort of. He's more like a radioactive urban legend character.
Yeah.
Outside of Vegas, where it's sort of the dregs of humanity have gone to survive, which makes sense. And this is more of a deep dive into the Vegas part.
Yeah, which
threw a couple of characters.
They threw that at us on the last page of the last one. It wasn't in the story at all. It was like, also these characters, and they seemed to have nothing to do with what we had just read. Yeah, and the very odd thing is that, like, basically somebody got back, they had found the thing that the king guy had wanted, and it was the Holy Grail, and we find out that they had scavenged Air Force One, and they got the nuclear football. And I was like, wow, you're all over the place here. And it's very compelling and funny and unexpected and all those things. And then
King Joffrey wants those codes.
And then we switch to like a down on her luck waitress who has two kids, you know, and she steals the nuclear football from under the jerky guy's face, you know, feet in the casino, and tells her kids, we got to take out it. I was like, that changed direction very quickly. Yeah. You know, it was edge of the seat. My only complaint is that her daughter looks the same age or older than the mother. We see this a lot in comics.
And that was the problem where I was like, wait, the mother died? And then I was like, oh, right. I forgot that was a daughter, too.
And that happened really quick, too. Like, all of a sudden, I was like, wait, she's dead? In terms of throwing a lot of sort of curveballs at us, I thought it was excellent. There's a bit where they get in a car and they're driving away. And there was an explanation for all of those things that happened, too, which I liked. As opposed to like, well, how'd they get out? Why did they get a car? Like, the mom figured all those things out ahead of time. And then they're driving along and a giant ant lands on the car. And you're like, Jesus. Like, it was really, you know, it was all the things.
A giant two-headed wolf kills the ant. Like, it was.
Yeah.
It was a lot.
And it worked.
The wolf is Geiger's pet.
Yeah.
Or sidekick or whatever you want to call it. But, I mean, look, the Gary Frank art is really great.
It was a little looser, I think, than we've seen from him in a while, and I don't mean that in a bad way.
I think it has to be to come out at all on time.
Sure,
but you know, he's an artist of exemplary talent who we hardly ever see. So it's nice to see, you know, the solid storytelling, great character faces, despite what you said, the sister and the mom being very similar looking.
That's an old man. Comic book artists have never gotten that right. I can't hold him accountable for this.
But you know, it's a very different kind of Geoff Johns book. When he announced he's doing an Image book, it's like, who, you know, we had no context what that might be like, and I don't think we really expected this kind of thing.
He's really only ever done superheroes.
Right.
I mean, the closest that you could say he got away from it is the Watchmen book he just did, you know.
True.
I can't think of, I feel like there was one other thing in the past.
I mean, he did an issue of Black Hammer Visions. That was it.
Mm-hmm. But that's DC heroes still, you know.
All right, but I mean, like, it's like that would be it. That would be the closest thing. And I also like this weird world he's created here with Vegas, where there's like different kingdoms per casino, and we've got the creepy king, boy king, in the main casino, and there's the Manhattan casino, which is like 1920s New York.
I hate any character with a page boy haircut. It creeps me out every time. I can't even quite get behind He-Man. I love that, like, Geoff Johns has been a presence in our comic book reading lives for 20 years. And he's like, well, what if I do this? And you're like, whoa, where the hell did this come from? And I think that's fascinating. And it's not terrible. A lot of people do that and then it's terrible and they just go back to it, but it's not.
Indeed.
He's a good decade or so behind everybody else doing the Image thing.
Well, he wrote that DC trade for a long time, longer than most people did. Batman the Detective, number 2. This is Tom Taylor's 6-issue miniseries of Batman. Older Batman. This is one of several Elseworlds, non-Elseworlds books that came out this week. Batman Detective, number 2. Out of 6, older Batman in England fighting a cabal of people who are killing everyone that he has ever saved.
I liked this. I think it gave me more context than the first one. I liked also that it has... it has a jauntiness to it. It does. Just a touch of humor, a bit of fun that I think, you know, is not often in Batman books. It's certainly not in future grim Batman books. It's a little silly with these.
Well, I don't know if it's the Kubert art, but it has a feeling of early Grant Morrison Batman.
It does. That's exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah.
It does.
It feels like that.
I mean, I think that Taylor is a guy who's great, obviously, but you can also see his influences, you know, pretty easily. So this has definitely got a Grant Morrison thing going. That Hellblazer book was like, oh, you read the Garth Ennis Hellblazer stuff. And it doesn't come off as imitation, but it comes off as like, I think the thing in this style is pretty cool and I'm going to do it that way. And he's doing it really well. And by the way, the Kubert art, we'd said this last time, but this is fantastic Kubert art. I just really liked the plot device and how it was visually rendered, that like the one guy got a tracker on him and the logic of like, so you're saying Batman saved you? He's like, no, I and then they had to kill him. Because he shouldn't exist. Their whole
when you
idea,
run up into the rules of the cult will come back and bite you in the ass.
It's true. Also, you've got heavy Ducard influence, a character who I'd never heard of before that movie.
Love Ducard.
Yeah, but Ducard, I could tell.
Henri Ducard is one of the guys who trained Batman on his, you know, global journey in his 20s before he became Batman. He trained him in detective work. And so
it was great.
I love that guy.
Yep. It was a really fun issue.
It was a really fun issue. So far, this is living up to all the hype I had built up in my head about it. It's once I was like, "Whoa, this is a very different kind of Batman story, but still very much a Batman story."
Mm-hmm.
I've been enjoying it. And listen, if they're going to be giving these guys free reign to do whatever now, this is the kind of thing that you want to come out of that.
Yeah,
that
it's totally true. Like, you know, as long as the stories keep up, do what you want, which I think is, you know, that's the idea.
We had another, not double sized book, but oversized book this week, Fantastic Four 32. From Dan Slott, Arby Silva, Javier Rodriguez, and friends. And this, what made me happy about this issue, this is the Bride of Doom Part 1, is that the we've been raving about the Fantastic Four series since Slott's been doing it. And the only part for me that was not as good was that storyline where they went to that planet where Johnny met his quote-unquote soulmate. I didn't like that storyline at all. And then she came back and she's been sort of there the whole time, kind of mucking up the whole situation. But now that relationship is in trouble. And I was like, yes, finally. Get her out of here.
I don't mind her. It's been an interesting, to me, it's a very Fantastic Four-y kind of thing, because it's very family, and it sort of disrupts the family, and it sort of gets to who he is, and it feels very off. And so you know that there's sort of something terrible coming. And I love the fact that like he ends up talking to his exes in this a lot. and the cover, it's funny because the cover seems to indicate that that we're going to find out that the lady's a Skrull, but it turns out that he was married to a Skrull who had tricked him into thinking she was somebody else. And I don't know that story, but it works. Like, it totally makes sense. And then he sleeps with Victorious, which is weird from out of nowhere, but not. And then while he's hiding under the bed, Doom proposes to her. And she says yes. And I was like, that's very awkward. That's extremely, extremely awkward.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't like the Sky character, but I did feel bad for her because she can sense or feel Johnny's emotions or feelings. This is kind of murky.
There was a real bit there where like, well, wait, what happened here? They're all standing outside the museum. Then we're back in her place.
You're supposed to not wonder, because then you know, the reveal that she knows that Johnny's sleeping with somebody else, so she's upset. And that made me feel bad for her.
There's a yada, yada, yada there that needs to be a little clearer.
The one thing that did not confuse me, but I wasn't quite sure what exactly was happening, was on page 18 of your digital reader, where Johnny's outside of the museum, because most of the issue takes place at the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York, I believe it's that one. And he's talking to his ex, the Skrull. And we cut to Alicia back home in her studio, creepily talking to a tiny version of the Skrull, you know, statue of the Skrull character.
I mean, are we learning now that Alicia is a puppet master? And a sort of a voodoo doll kind of thing.
She seems to be talking through the statue out of the Skrull's mouth. So what was happening there?
I don't know, but it's
it was creepy.
So Alicia is a classical Roman sculptor.
Pretty much. She does big marble sculptures. Yeah. Huh. Yeah, that's been her thing. She does giant. All the marble sculptures in the Marvel Universe, basically, she did. Although, like, superhero ones. The ones with the Avengers and all that stuff.
Nice.
And then I really liked the little tiny backup story that Javier Rodriguez drew that was a flashback to college in the 60s, and which I love. Doesn't make sense, but I love it.
No, it doesn't have to.
And then where Reed tries to, you know, make friends with Victor. Victor's like, fuck off. And Reed tries to do it through chess. And so we jump to the future or the present, and an awesome chess match between Reed and Victor involving swords. And I thought that was really inventive and fun. I really liked the sequences where they're fighting and playing chess at the same time.
And the prize is, you know, one must do a boon for the other. And then...
And what Victor wants is he wants Reed to be his best man. That dude needs therapy.
He does. He loves Reed, and he just can't... It's so good. Whatever deal that Dan Slott signed to make himself so good at this was a good deal. And I don't understand how I could not read the Amazing Spider-Man stuff for 5 seconds, but mm-hmm. I can totally get into this. I love that. Same thing as we were just talking about with Jeff Johns. Like, well, he just did this different thing, and it's great. Yeah. It's one of those things where people think that you have to like a comic writer. You don't have to like everything they do. You know, maybe they just, you know, doesn't work for you. But then you do something else, and you can love it. And that's so much better than
Sometimes there's a confluence of writer and property,
and artist and time and
all kinds of things. Yeah, yep. It's an alchemy.
You want to talk about alchemy?
Oh boy.
When we're gonna thank Mac Walden for being our sponsor today. And boy, you want to talk about the right thing at the right time? It's pretty much most days I can grab a pair of the Mac Weldon that I have in my, I want to say I have four varieties of
four.
Their
wow.
Of their underwears. Underwears.
Underswear.
Underswear. I think that's the way it goes.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, you may have noticed that it's in the United States anyway, things are heating up. I don't mean that in a figurative sense. I mean, it's getting warmer. Spring is coming. We're starting to get a little summer temperatures. And let me just tell you that heat, and I'm going to go ahead and say it, moisture management.
Sure.
Is becoming imperative. And having the different options of the different fabrics that they've got, we're going to get to those, has been a big thing. So, you know, now that you're getting back to things, you got your vaccines out there. They saying you can go out, do things, especially outside. You're going to be nice and safe, which is all good news. And the fact is that the Mack Weldon stuff is going to make this stuff better. So let's talk about the Stealth Boxer Briefs. You got your body mapping technology. I don't know what that means. Fabric mesh zones. I kind of understand what that means because I have a pair of those, and different parts of it have different fabrics depending on what you need there. So one is moving moisture away, one is stretching, one is not, one is supporting. I think you get the point. The Stealth Boxer Briefs are kind of intense. I'm like, well, I need to save these for when I'm storming foreign capitals. They deliver
on radar. That's important.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't even think of that. There's enhanced breathability and support. They're perfect for everyday wear or layered underneath workout gear. I have even layered them underneath a swimsuit, which they say you can do. You got the sweatpants without feeling like you're wearing sweatpants, because let's be honest, over the last year, sweatpants, you know, they've kind of been played out. But the Mack Weldon Ace line is a darn fine sweatpant. And also, you have the option for the short version. You have this, I believe.
I do. And actually, it's been quote unquote cold in the Los Angeles area in the past week. It's dipped down into the 60s. And so I was wearing my Ace sweatpants just yesterday. Mm-hmm.
It's a fine. I've had mine for a couple of years now. I got no pills. I don't have significant shrinkage. It's a darn fine piece of kit. So we're out doing those things. I've been using the more breathable versions of these to do athletic activities. When it's a little colder, we go back to the other thing. It's very nice. They are your one stop shop for socks, shirts, hoodies. Wore my t-shirt the other day too. Very nice. Underwear, polos, or active shorts. Mack Weldon promises comfort and a consistent fit. They look great. They feel great. If you're working out, you're going out, you're going on a date. That might be a thing that happens more often now. Dates. Can you imagine? I mean, I can't because I've been married for 1,000 years. But Mack Weldon is for your everyday life, all those types of life.
You would be a disaster if you had to go back out there.
I was then. I mean, it wouldn't be any different.
It would be even worse now.
I understand that. I understand that. So, I was like, let's not walk down that road, Josh. There's a wide range of customized fabrics that we were talking about, you know, the Stealth. We're talking about the Air Knit. Those are the ones I really like for when I'm doing stuff. There's Weldon Blue, the totally free loyalty program. Level one gets you free shipping for life. Once you get to level two, by spending $200, you get 20% off every order for the next year. They're just giving you money in a reverse sort of way. They guarantee that they want you to be comfortable. You do not like your first pair of underwear, keep them. They will still refund you. No questions asked. Obviously, they don't want your old dirty skivvies back, but they're saying, we believe
don't
you.
Don't mail them back.
Don't do that. They're saying, though, we believe you. You don't like them. And fair enough. And I'm sure they think, we don't understand that. And which I don't either, by the way. Right. But they've got that there. That's there. I've never known anyone to take them up on that. I would imagine it's a low recidivism rate.
Right.
You're thinking, I want to get into this. 20% off your first order. Go to macweldon.com/ifanboy. Enter promo code ifanboy. And remember, you buy things, you start to get 20% off again. So it's not just the first time. That's macweldon.com/ifanboy with the promo code ifanboy. 20% off your first order. Mack Weldon is reinventing men's basics, and thank goodness for it. That's what I say.
Exactly. Carmen number three. I think there's only five issues. I'm trying to figure out.
I got the feeling, I was like, was this the last issue? Because it felt like it. Like a really down ending, but I don't know.
Well, this one was the turning of the corner.
Yes.
Right? We learned a lot in this one. I think there's only a couple, or if one, there's not many left. I feel dumb that for not realizing that Carmen is karma. And that's the whole thing here, is this, it's not really like a Judeo-Christian view of the world, even though the dead bodies are sort of floating up. It's that it's all karma based.
With reincarnation, and yeah, it's not, and she's not the Grim Reaper, or the Angel of Death. She's karma. I don't think that I put it together. It was karma, but I did know, you know, like there's another character who comes along who's Carmella. Yeah. And actually for a little bit, I was like, wait, who is Carmen? Cause I'd lost track. Yeah, but she's had enough of this girl's bullshit.
Yeah. And there was some really just, you know, rough parts here where, you know, the last shoot, the cliffhanger, was that the main girl is Catalina. Fell off a statue and she's falling to the earth, and she falls through a woman who's pushing a baby carriage, and she sees in a twisted film strip this woman's life, which has been tough, and that was sad and disturbing. And then we deal with the suicide. It sort of wakes her up to what's going on, and, you know, finally someone tells her off, like, you know, did you even think about your parents? Did you even think about your friends? Did you even think about it? And she's like, I didn't think about any of this, which is, you know, it's the tough thing about suicide, amongst many tough things, is that there's a bit of resentfulness.
Well,
for the people who were left behind.
Yeah, and it's thought
upset,
to be,
sad, you're also angry because,
and it's thought to be an inherently selfish act.
Right.
And now there's not to, I don't know. There's a lot there, and I thought it was an interesting turn on things. Whereas before, it was very much like, almost like a celebration of life, you know, like these are all the great things and the beautiful things, and you're flying and just be okay with it. And now it was like, all right.
And then we get the incredibly sad story of this dude.
Oh, that poor nerd.
This poor nerd who met this cute waitress and developed a friendship and then a relationship, and he's going to propose to her, and she's very excited, and he gets hit by a car, and we see his whole life play out, and it's just like,
and then
he doesn't understand he's dead, and he's trying to find the
ring.
That
was the worst, was the denial of like, hold on, let me find the ring, and they work together to do it, and it doesn't matter.
Oh. It's like, oh no, buddy.
It's like, look at me. No, I'm not going to stand out. I'm not that good looking. So I had to work harder for everything, you know, and I got this girl and she is perfect and I've loved her from the moment I've met her. You get hit by a fucking car.
This book remains really incredible, like out of nowhere.
Yep.
Like, totally. Who knew Guillaume March had this in him after years of,
it's possible. You know, it's possible European comic readers did. I don't know.
Damn them.
I mean, there might be other books. I don't know.
That's true.
Did you read Justice League Last Ride number one?
I did. This would be the other Elseworlds book I was talking about. Originally supposed to be a digital-only book, or digital first book, and I believe it's just a regular book now. Chip Zdarsky, continuing his sort of slow bleed into DC, and art by Miguel Mondonaka.
The little sede on the C would indicate that it's a soft C sound, so Mondonza.
This is a story about the League in the future, in which they've sort of broken up. Batman and Superman have a rift.
I like that a lot. I like that just that device of them, like nobody said what was going on, but you knew there was a problem. I really, that was like, that's a good place to start a story.
And they have to come together for one last mission to keep Lobo alive, because Lobo killed the New Gods and he's awaiting trial and people are going to try to kill him. So they have to keep him alive.
It's really one of those, I know that you hate Lobo. I do. Yeah. But
that's fine. He's a plot device here.
I do like the idea of Lobo being the person they have to protect, and he is unrepentant. He is not going to help you. You know, there's movies. I'm sure there's movies, and I can't think of a single one of them.
Sure, there's tons of movies where they have to protect, you know, the bad guy. You know, like 310 to Yuma. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got Christian Bale, not the original, obviously, but you know, they got to protect the bad guy, get him to the train. Mm-hmm. You know, there's all kinds of this. It's a well-worn story. It's a good one.
Yeah.
There's a lot of tension in it. But so you have Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman. It looks like Wally, Flash, and then John Stewart, although Hal shows up as well, and Kilowog and Jessica Cruz, because they're the ones transporting Lobo. And I liked it. I liked it a lot.
I did. It was a lot of fun. It was high on a specific time period of superhero stuff. I think it's interesting that all the Green Lanterns are depicted in this as constantly glowing green.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, how are they going to keep him in the Green Lantern construct? That seems like a better way to go. They got to let him out of there. And, you know, in this context, I think that Lobo represents a threat and like a real one.
Right.
It's fun. I really, and you know, the drama stuff between Batman and Superman was really interesting. You never see this part. Like, what about years later when somebody finally had enough of that other bastard? And it works both ways.
Yeah, and it's fine as this kind of story.
Yes.
That's like a self-contained future Elseworlds tale. Like, I'm happy with them being friends in the main book. That's what I want. But in the future, we can play with that. It was really fun. I'm happy to see Chip Zdarsky, you know, dipping his toes in both waters.
The guy's got range. The guy's got mad range.
He does. Speaking of Rorschach number 8, Tom King, Jorge Fornes, Dave Stewart, Clayton Cowles, I really loved the format of this. And I'm sure it was probably controversial and polarizing. But I loved the, you know, each page being broken up into thirds and each story of a different witness being interviewed by the cop. Or interviewed is a light term for what he does to them. But
I wasn't entirely clear why he was beating the shit out of them. I thought he was an investigator.
That was kind of a shocking twist. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a hell of a structure, and it was one of those ones. This is a Tom King thing, is that you just have to go, I recognize that I have no idea what's going on here for a while. And as you read through it, it's always a backwards kind of, you know, puzzle. So if you stick with it long enough by the end, it'll sort of make sense to you. Much like the film Tenet.
So, like, you know, we learn a lot about how...
all the things that led up.
Steve Ditko and his young protege trained to try to assassinate Robert Redford with the help of Frank Miller. This is the book.
And various Golden and Silver Age comic book luminaries.
They actually weren't trying to assassinate Robert Redford. They're trying to assassinate the other guy, Turley. But still,
Redford is the
president. And so we learned about, you know, they built this house in the desert, and then they built this shooting range that mimicked where they were going to do it, and these three guys were involved somehow, and it's the financial advisor, the therapist, and then like their sort of gopher guy, the sort of guy who helped them with you know, stuff like shopping and stuff.
That second to last page, I think, really sold the whole thing for me. I was like, whoa, what's this? What's happening?
Yes, that's where that was the moment, mm-hmm. right? We're in issue 8 of 12, right? So now we're in the home stretch. So the cop ends up beating the hell out of these three suspects and Columbo. And they say in consecutive panels in different time periods, oh, it is you. I've been waiting for you. And you're like, with a creepy, mm-hmm. bloody grin on the last guy's face. And I was like, oh, shit. What does that mean?
Yeah, it's good.
And what does it mean that he pulls a red cup off of the water thing, but then it turns green?
I mean, normally it means that there's a terrible coloring mistake, but...
That could be it. It's Dave Stewart.
Then it's not that.
Then it's blue.
Well, it's the three time periods. So the first third is there's a red cup, and he takes a drink. And then the second third is he's come out from the second interrogation, and he's still That's got green. The blood. And the third one is the blue cup as he goes back in to talk to the handyman.
Although the top one, he's pulling a red cup off of the sleeve of green. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah, but they can be in there in different orders. They don't have to be directly afterwards. Those things are randomly loaded in there.
Yeah. This is fun. I'm really looking forward to the final, you know, three issues, four issues, and math is hard. And this is crazy, just crazy enough.
Yeah, and I'm completely past the point of caring that it's Watchmen, and thinking you shouldn't do this. Really, I don't care. I haven't cared in a while, and I know that there's lots of people out there who still care and are mad about it. And you could not love the text of that first graphic novel more than I do, but if you're going to do rad things with it, go for it.
I bet it's really fun to write the Frank Miller scenes.
You know it. You can tell. And drawing Frank Miller being a nutbag, it's great. It's just so dumb.
Those are the books we wanted to talk about. But at patreon.com/ifanboy, you can vote to add a book to the rundown. Every patron gets a vote. One patron, one vote. And this week, they voted for Time Before Time, number one, just like Josh did. And so we'll do ratings on Time Before Time, number one, from Declan Shelby, Roy McConville, Joe Palmer, Chris O'Halloran, and Hassan Osman Eloi. Elau?
Elhau?
Time Before Time, out of five, I'm giving it a 4.
4.25.
Sticking with it.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah,
absolutely. Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's how people help the show. If you're like, hey, I want to support these guys. I enjoy the show. I enjoy the content. And I enjoy the entertainment they brought over the last 15 years of the show and 20 years of the website. How do I support them? Patreon.com/iFanboy. They've unlocked lots of great content that everybody gets to enjoy. There's been the patron picks, the talk explodes, the books explodes, the media explodes, the YouTube shows going back up. And for them, they get the monthly patron hangout. All those things have been unlocked by the patrons. So there's more shows for everyone to enjoy, and all because of the patrons at patreon.com/iFanboy. We have stretch goals that we're still trying to hit. One is another show in which we follow the classic G.I. Joe cartoon. And then the next one after that is we bring back the barbecue and email video show, which was always a huge, huge favorite back in the day. And that'll come back on a quarterly basis if we had our next stretch goal. So check that out. And also, if you join the patrons, you get to hang out in the Facebook group or the Discord server. Josh made a surprise appearance in the Discord server this week. And there are really fun communities that echo the old days of iFanboy, and we do love that it's happening. It's all a lot of great things happening at patreon.com/iFanboy. Also, iFanboy.threadless.com, that's where our t-shirts are sold. We have 8 designs, the iFanboy logo shirt, the Herm shirt, the Pick the League podcast shirt, the rating shirt, if the one is Electro shirt, the GDAT shirt, the Nothing Makes Sense, Nothing Matters shirt, and Stay Home Read Comics shirt. And those are all available. You can also get those designs and other things, but primarily they're shirts. And we have some new designs. We're waiting on Josh on the newest one. He said, I have some sketch ideas. We're still waiting.
I sort of went after it, and I was like, I don't like any of this. So that's what happened with that. I didn't forget. I was like, I don't know what you were thinking. It was one day I was like, I think this will work. And then the next day I went for it, and I was like, hey, what are you thinking? You don't have this talent.
So we do have a couple of we're designing, although now probably time to kick it over to the professionals. And you can get, like I said, you can get them on phone covers, bath mats, notebooks, shower curtains, all kinds of things. Do they have onesies?
I'm sure they do.
Well, there you go. If you've got a new newborn in your life, get a onesie. Get a Nothing Makes Sense, Nothing Matters onesie for the newborn in your life. teach them early. iFanboy.com/support is where you can throw a tip jar to the PayPal thing. Those are words that make sense. You can throw some money in the tip jar via PayPal, and we do appreciate that. If you don't want to be a patron, or if you don't want to buy a t-shirt, totally fine. Some people do that, and it's great. And iFanboy.com/Amazon, that's where you can find our Booksplode books, as well as the general Amazon link. And we thank everybody who does that. That's how you keep the show going. It helps us pay the bills and rewards our time for the effort it takes to do these shows, which is not nothing. And we do appreciate it.
So I thought not a lot of books this week would be fine, but we're totally not going to get to all the email.
Yeah, we spend too much time in the books. That's just the reality.
That's what you show up for.
One last thing for the patrons. If you give it the $5 or higher level, you get your own superpower live on the show. It's a reward for doing so. And so we'd like to thank these people in that manner. Alexander Lampe? Lamp? Uh-huh. Maybe the E's silent. I don't know. That's the danger of all this. I'm going to say Lampe. Alexander Lampe, you've... Well, maybe you haven't. Have you seen any of the Harry Potter movies? Okay.
I went and saw pretty much every one of them in the theater by myself.
That's interesting. I didn't even do that.
Well, I'd read all the
books. We were a little too old for it.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I mean, like at one point.
This is a conversation for a long time. Power that Alexander Lampe has is that any photograph he touches turns into a Harry Potter photograph. So he gets to see. They move. So, like, you know, let's just an old photograph of, I don't know, FDR at his desk at the White House, right? So he gets to see if they're sort of the gif of what was happening before and after the photograph is being taken.
Or gif, whichever. So,
or GIF, whatever you want to say. I go with the way that the creator of the GIF says it.
We should have this discussion now. I brought it up, but I couldn't sit here. I can't take it.
So he turns any photograph into a Harry Potter photograph just by touching it.
Matteo Arena. I'm liking this. I'm liking the next two names a lot. Is the bus flinger. Can fling buses.
Oh,
that's the only type of vehicle that can be flung. But like you can use this guy on the set of any modern superhero movie because you need someone to fling a bus.
Sure. Got to get a budget line in for Matteo. There's a lot of bus flinging in this movie.
Yeah. So he comes in, he flings buses. Like, you know, well, doesn't it make sense that he could fling a smaller vehicle? No, he can fling a bus. Can he juggle the buses? No, he can fling them. So like a perfect spiral. Are you listening? He flings them.
He just flings it.
He's a bus flinger.
Maximo Vega. Great name. Whenever Maximo sits on a chair or a sofa or whatever, whatever he's sitting on becomes the most optimally ergonomic situation possible.
Wow.
So like the chair will morph into becoming totally ergonomic and he won't hurt his back or anything from sitting.
I have an ergonomic chair and I find that it just means that I more frequently find that I'm slouching. Oh, wait. Okay. Back up. And then brr, him down. Adam Granger is the master of polymers. He can shape and work and change polymers. Okay. Now, you might be saying, Josh, what is a polymer? That's not my problem. I could look it up and tell you, but you could do the same thing. So he's the master of polymers. He'll work out how that happens, what it means, what polymers are. Ryan's not here, so I don't have to listen to an explanation of it. I'm going to get a text, but still.
Hey, could, you know, it's important to be a master of polymers.
There's Kang, master of time. Adam Granger, master of polymers.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can go and add a book. You can add a book to the rundown. But if you give the $5 higher level, you can get your own superpower live on the show, like Alexander and Matteo and Maximo and Adam. Thank you.
I'm coming to the end of my list that I had a fugue state one night and I wrote like 20 of them down. And so for each show for the past couple of months, I've been like, I'm good. I got my list. I've only got two things left on there and they're not the best ones. So I might have to take another go at it.
What are you going to do, producer man?
Let's see. Let's do Chris A. My 10-year-old is getting into drawing and likes to mimic comic artists as he is learning. Do you have any comic book art recommendations? I got the Darwin DC book, The Art of Darwin, and the Mignola Quarantine Sketchbook. Any advice is appreciated. And I've been thinking about this question for as long as I've been trying to get him to care about anything other than video games and YouTuber. Bring it in, Chris. Bring it in, Chris. Gotta give you a warm...
It's the lament of every parent, I know.
Oh, the YouTubers just yell constantly, and I'm so afraid they're going to talk like them, and I don't want to talk like them. Oh, excitement equals being interesting.
The problem is allowing the internet into your house.
I know.
That was your first mistake.
I know. The problem is that's literally what I do for a living and this second job. So,
you know what you should do is you should block YouTube and all your devices and manufacture a fake news article about how YouTube went out of business.
How will I watch Seth Meyers?
I have to watch it on television like everybody else. It's a small price to pay for getting that out of your life.
What
and out of your
if we? I learn a lot from YouTube too. A lot of guitar stuff. I listen to old men, so it's not. And they're all men. So let's talk about this. I know it. Maybe this is obvious, and I know it's maybe an oldie but goodie kind of thing. But How to Draw Comics the Marvel Way was the book that made me want to draw, and I still think about it to this day when I look at comics and how
I mean, it may be tough for style.
I don't know.
I think it'd be semi-style. Timeless, but it's gonna have tons of great lessons on the way to tell stories. How do you tell stories?
Like, it was like, what makes a drawing interesting? There's all these bits of like, and I would say I was about 11 when I got it, and it was old then, so it was a little.
We all had it.
You know, the thing where they'll show like here's three figures, you know, one's it's all the same drawing, but one's dramatic and one isn't, you know. And I that still sticks with me. It's super interesting. And I also like I would draw the pictures that I saw in there, and it is a little more it's a departure from like a Darwin Cook art or certainly a Mignola art, because it's like that sort of classic sculpted comic book John Buscema thing. But it didn't even have to be. Like I'm thinking there's a thing where there's just a rough sketch of Doom, and they sort of show him from the front, from below, from like up above and canted.
God, I was always so frustrated. I couldn't make it look like John Buscema.
No, and he made it look easy. But I mean, that's
1978 was when that book was published. By the way.
So I was there 10 years after it came out. It's going to be closer to 40 something years after it comes out. But I still think that there's something worth it in there.
The lessons are timeless.
Yeah, I really think so. And the drawings are just great. So that's my first and really only significant.
Did you know, I mean, I'm sure you did know this, and this is ironic considering our discussion we just had, but there was a video that came along that you could buy as well.
I don't remember the video.
There was a How to Draw Comics on Marvel Way video, and it's on YouTube.
Did Stan?
The full length is on YouTube. It's an hour long. I remember I had it or someone had it, but it's got Stan, John Buscema, you know, Stan's talking over John as he draws over the table, and it's basically like lessons from the book in video form, and you watch Buscema draw.
That might make it seem a lot older than reading the book would. Like, oh, look at these old men. But not only old men, but old timey old men. As far as like other art books, I don't know. I feel like I used to know a lot more about this than I do now. I'm sure people still do them, but since so much sketching ends up digitally, you know, it's like Instagram fodder much more than is people putting it into books, and sort of that high class Darwin Cook art book is a little more rare. But I would say that, I mean, show him a bunch of art and see which ones he likes, and then check and see if those people do, you know, sketchbooks or anything that you can order or something like that. I bet a lot of folks made sketchbooks and still have stores of them that they're selling on their big cartel store or something like that. I've had a couple of Scotty Young ones. I've had Ryan Otley did one, although I don't know that that's appropriate for a 10-year-old. That's your call. It shouldn't be. The drawing is, but it's then the decapitated limbs and blood and stuff that might make it a little different. Because art is so varied now, like the styles, you know, from the time that when that book came out, you know, in the 70s, all the art kind of looked the same. It was a house style kind of thing. And now there's just so many different things. But at the same time, like, you don't need art books. You just go with the you know, the sequential stuff. Like, that's where their best stuff's going to work and live.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, I mean, we just denigrated, but I think you can find also a lot of artists on YouTube doing how-to stuff in terms of fairly well-known artists doing that. Or at least you can find videos of them drawing. Yeah. And that as a kid, I always liked to watch. I like to watch it as an adult, but you know, as someone learning to draw as a kid, I always like to do that
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I think that's great too, to sort of just see those things come to life.
That's why the Google Stanley How to Draw Comics the Marvel Way on YouTube, and you'll get the full length video. It's an hour long, and it's all about perspective and dynamism.
Yeah,
It's cool.
Absolutely. Let's move along. We will deal with that other question next time.
Contact@ifanboy.com.
You can send us questions there. Make sure that you're thinking about it in terms of the show. An essay ain't going to work. It's something we can talk about.
Short, punchy.
You can offer your opinion quickly. But you know, we can't do a whole treatise. It's not going to happen. Also, we invite you to write in questions for our Media Explode shows as well. Those happen once a month, and we always like to do at least a question on there if we can, and that makes it more interesting because it's stuff that we wouldn't necessarily think of. So there's special editions.
Yes, so we had the Invincible show last week, in which Paul and I and a special guest Josh discussed the first season of Invincible. And then, fingers crossed, there's a Justice Society World War II special edition right behind this show in the feed that Paul and Ryan and I talked about, the new DC animated film, Justice Society World War II. So hopefully that's there. As the time of the recording, it's not there, but I'm hoping it will be there.
You're really the only one in charge of that.
Yeah, but life happens. Life gets in the way. Life finds a way to get in the way.
Chaos.
Yeah. So I think it will. I'm planning on it. It just hasn't happened, so I can't say for sure.
You are one back spasm away from not getting a show.
Right. I turned the wrong way in this chair, and the show is not coming out.
There will be a media explode soon. It feels like we just did one, but I guess that was for the last month. So, and there will be...
It should be this coming week, maybe.
There will be a Talksplode soon. And update, Connor's learning this now. I have a confirmation. Just going to set a time. We're going to talk to a person who did a book that we liked very much and has had an interesting career.
John Buscema.
It's John Buscema. Is he alive?
I don't think so. Sal might be. But I don't think so.
They're like the Hemsworths.
No, John died in 2002.
Oh, it was a while ago. Jeez.
He's
a titan. And then the next Booksplode will be coming next month, but you're going to want to get started on Injustice, Gods Among Us, Year 1, The Complete Collection. And understand, too, there's also Year 2 and Year 3. So if you're diving into this, you could be in for a lot of reading, but that might not necessarily be a bad thing.
Hey, Sal's still alive.
Good man. So is Larry Lieber.
Yeah, he's 85 years old. He's 85 years old.
So that's those shows. If you want to head over to ifanboy.com, you can find all the shows, and you will find our backlog of Talksplodes and Mediasplodes and Booksplodes for your enjoyment. Like, oh, why haven't they ever talked about this? Maybe we did. I don't remember. Don't ask me if we did it. Connor might remember. He's got a spreadsheet he can check. But they're all there. You can find out what the pick of the week is before it comes out, or other random, we post a little bit, not a ton, on facebook.com/ifanboy, at ifanboy on Twitter, and ifanboy comics on Instagram. You can follow us individually on Instagram at CS Kilpatrick and at JA Flanagan. There's that. You can subscribe to our YouTube page at youtube.com/ifanboy and keep up to date on the old video show reuploads, which this past week include a mini. That was the pick of the week, which was Giant Size Astonishing X-Men number 1 with Fallen.
Look at the synergy. Look at
by
the synergy.
Fallen hero Joss Whedon. There's a whole show on superhero costumes, which I don't imagine we just like put up a picture of the Flash and we're like, we're out.
We talked about the ones we liked and why we liked them and which ones didn't work and why.
Did you go through it all? Did we talk about Taskmaster?
I scrubbed through it. And I did see an image of Taskmaster.
As long as that was covered, that's all I want. And then apparently I did an interview with Jeff Johns at Jim Hanley's Universe. By the way, this was a bellwether watermark in my career as a comic book interviewer. I really liked that. This was at the time that Green Lantern Rebirth was coming out. Flash Rebirth.
It was in conjunction with the Flash Rebirth.
You're right. At the time when the artist of that book was not a complete pariah, but he was not there.
Yeah.
And honestly, it was one of those, like, there was a whole crowded house and we did the thing. And Jeff told me about that one later. He said he didn't know me and or what we did. And he said he sat down expecting to get a bunch of comic book questions. And I quickly moved into talking about craft, as I will, because that's what I like to talk about. And he lit up. You know, and he said things in that about making comics that I still think about today when I think about how I'm going to talk about creativity and comics and the art and the craft and all that stuff. So that was great. I really liked that time. So that exists now for you to watch. It's a while back, but it's still worth seeing, I think.
Yep. If you like the show, please consider leaving a review on iTunes if you have it still, or Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Sometimes muscle memory kicks in and the old script comes out.
MySpace.com/ifanboy. We never had
kids,
that.
Your letter carrier, your litter carrier, your pet litter carrier. Anyone doing that. Now that people are doing things, if you're on a flight, tell the flight attendant, everyone you encounter now.
Bing,
we're all outside. We haven't talked to people in a while. Just tell anyone you run into.
Yeah, can I have some extra peanuts? And also, I don't know if you like comic books, but you're on these flights a lot. I see you have AirPods back there. You might want to check out. And then, she's
yeah, or play it over this over the you know the speaker on the plane.
People love when you share your audio with them on any kind of public transport.
Sure. No, what I'm saying is get them to pipe it through the.
I mean, it's
PA
a fair
system.
Question. They must have Bluetooth.
Yeah. Right. You know. It's all
you know
fine.
They don't have Bluetooth. You know I'm that certain. They have a plug with like a quarter inch mono, like clonk.
For sure. Help us spread the word and the love. And you know what? Right before we sign off,
yeah.
Josh, one more thing I thought of for Chris's question was I used to really enjoy. I don't know if he still does it or not, and I enjoyed it for several reasons. But on Instagram TV, which I don't even know if it still exists as
IGTV,
a function,
yes.
But Todd McFarlane used to do how-to videos.
Huh.
And they were great for several reasons. One, he's terrific, like as a person, but like as a person to watch. But he draws really well. I mean, he hardly draws at all. So it was fun to watch him draw. Like I watched him do a whole thing on eyes, how to draw eyes, and it was fascinating.
Huh.
And so my point is you can find those kind of videos all over the place by established artists doing that.
Unfortunately,
kind of stuff.
That puts him back on YouTube. So it's right back where it started.
No, that's Instagram.
The point stands.
Yeah, so there you go. Anyway, and I'm going to also pat myself on the back for during your ad read of the sponsorship talking about the heat, not talking about the heat is on by Glenn Frey. I wanted to.
You'll notice a marked difference between the music that you would choose for a show and the music that I would choose for a show. So don't get your hopes up. Although you would already
saying,
know that.
It was coming out of my mouth, and I decided not to besmirch the sponsors.
There was
with Mark Glenn Frey.
There was a local commercial for a Boston television station that we would get in Maine, and that is where I heard that song. And it was like people talking about how the summer was around, and that was the reason to watch WLVI.
You didn't see it on Beverly Hills Cop?
I don't know that it stuck with me than a commercial that I saw 70,000 times a day.
I see that makes sense. All right, that's this for this week's show. I'm Connor.
I'm Josh.
The heat is on. It's on the street.
Don't know when though. Never know when I'll be back in town. But remember what I tell you. In time, you're gonna pay. And it's surprising how time slips away.